Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to the Woven Energy Podcast on Real Practical Shamanism with me, Joseph Sikora, and Damon Smith. We are here with episode 38, I believe, and it's been a while. I think it's been about 2 months since we released our last episode. Be interesting to see how that one's gone down. But we had a lot of fun on that one, didn't we, Damon?
We did indeed.
You put me in my place.
One of us more than the other.
Yeah.
I genuinely enjoyed it the least.
I enjoyed that episode a lot. It put a lot of things in place for me. Because I am guilty, as I'm sure a lot of people are, of approaching shamanism with that kind of mindset, with the must take drugs mindset. So it was a very interesting episode. And if you haven't listened to that one yet, guys, then do listen to that episode. It is one of the most practical, sort of down-to-earth, non-woo-woo episodes that we've done. Not that we do any woo-woo episodes, but hopefully you get what I mean by now.
I'm glad to have it out the way, Joe, to be honest. Yeah. Hopefully I don't have to talk again about it for a while.
We'll sprinkle it in now and again. You know, we've got to keep people on their toes. The episode we want to continue with, the episode we want to continue from, should I say, is episode 36, yeah, which was our first kind of practical episode on stage 3, which we've called the Spirit Dance. Can you, what's that called in Mongol again? What's the general term for stage 3 in Mongol?
So, depends. So it depends what you mean, but Bobuchik is the spirit dance in Mongol. But do you remember what we've said is that that spirit dance is an example of stage 3 technique, right? It's not the kind of be all and end all of stage 3 technique. Does that make some sense? Because you could imagine other techniques done at the same level. I mean, for instance, Booking Hengrik, you could definitely do that as a level 3 technique, and that would have nothing to do with spirit dance, but it would still be a level 3 technique. So,
yeah.
But
Booking Hengrik being the example we use for stage 2, right?
You can also use stage 1 and stage 2 and stage 3, and if you really want to, all the way up to the Nechtel. Yeah, stage 7, yeah. The point I'm trying to make is, you know, I'm a spirit dance specialist, you could say. And so I have a lot to say about
that. That is a really important point, that though, isn't it? Yeah. Because we are conditioned to put things in boxes and go, well, I need a specific technique for stage 2. I need a specific technique for stage 3. And I think it's very important to recognize the overall spread and the nuance that exists in all of these ideas.
Absolutely.
I get that all the time with the piano that I'm teaching. You know, people want very specific things, and I'm like, this works, but if you want to get really good, then, you know, zoom out a little bit. See it all as a big picture.
Yeah, Joe's Shamanic Piano Academy.
Yeah.
Which is effectively what it is. You know,
a few people who follow me on that have found the Woven Energy Podcast, and I get a few messages now. Oh, you're into shamanism, are you?
Isn't it clear
an interesting conversation.
To me, it should be clear from your piano channel that you're into shamanism, even without mentioning it. It was immediately clear to me anyway.
I've stolen a few ideas. Yeah. With that out of the way, we've got a spread for all of these techniques, but we are we're talking about Bobuchik, which is the Mongolian term for spirit dance, which is one aspect of stage three of shamanism.
Yeah, it's also just one Mongolian term for spirit dance as well. We've said there's another widely used one, which is the tam, which is okay. has two leans towards esoteric Buddhism, but still the same thing, still spirit dance. Yeah, so as we know, Mongolia was a joint shamanic and Buddhist culture, except that the Buddhism, the particular flavor of Buddhism that was imported into Mongolia, is Tibetan Buddhism, which is deeply steeped itself in shamanism. Effectively, Mongolia effectively has native and imported strands of shamanism.
Yeah, and depending on where you look and how deep you look, there's strands of shamanism that exists in all sorts of regions and cultures, isn't there?
Yeah, indeed.
Okay, so stage three. Can you give a very brief, quick recap on where we got to with episode 36?
Yeah, well, I can't exactly remember what we covered and what we didn't cover.
I think we just started it, didn't we? It was a...
Yeah, my vague recollection is we sort of got to the point where we had a notion of practicing this in a grove-like area. And that we, as we all know, we need to have chelicity in place while we're doing these things. And as we all know, we need to have amskar in place, that sort of lightweight observation of self that comes through amskar practice. That needs to be in place. Now, that's quite important for this stuff, because you need to be able to observe yourself without heavy baseline activity going on in your brain. Mm. And I think we were sort of talking about, as I recall, it's a long time ago now, and I haven't listened to it recently, we were talking about moving around the perimeter of the grove, around the outside of the grove, in a state of chillicity. And that kind of shamanic walking in a state of chillicity, incidentally, is called alchach. I don't know if I mentioned that in the previous episode, but that's this Mongol name. And we are effectively just trying to get used to walking, using the sort of lightweight observation of self gained through amskar practice, and keeping chillicity on. We're not thinking as we're doing this, and just getting the ability to move around in the area that is your grove, if you like. And I don't know if we mentioned also, we need a character of heaviness, like the muscles and the flesh are hanging on the bones of the skeleton, almost like the skeleton is a clothes hook and the rest of the body is just like some loose piece of clothing hanging on that. Mm-hmm. In Mongol, that's called ashgui. And so we have the alchach, the chelicity-based walking, which incidentally isn't necessarily very fast. It can just be a normal walking pace, and come back. So, you know, think of that, the Bagtamste Saab combined into Alkach. The heaviness quality will actually come. If your chelicity is good enough and you just start that sort of walking around the grove, the heaviness comes quite easily. And I recommend that at some point, once you've got used to this sort of walking, maintaining chelicity, you should know when you're in the state of chelicity by now. You should feel that. You should feel the thought just disappear, vanish from your being. It should be gone. Mm. And you're sort of hanging in that space where there is no thought as you're moving around. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then you need to start winding back several episodes, getting back to the, is it 7, 8, and 9, the chelicity episodes?
Yeah, the...
Yeah, because we are... Yeah,
chelicity episode, that fits stage 1, 2, and 3 of chelicity on there.
By civilized standards, we're now getting into fairly advanced stuff, and it's just going to wreck these episodes as we go on if I have to keep going back over all of that stuff. Mm. You must have practiced the chelicity stuff. It's not just enough to understand it and to have listened to it. You must have practiced and practiced and practiced. You must have practiced amskar, practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced. And now coming into the level 3 technique, if you've got that foundation, then you know what I'm talking about already. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then head back multiple episodes. Mm. you're not thinking, you're hanging in that space that is the Bagtamstos Alb. Your Ashqui is on, your Alchach is flowing. And again, I don't know if we mentioned last time, but it's good to put your hands into the Tearoth position as you're moving around your area, your grove. You know, a stone circle for me. I'm kind of blessed with where I live. This is an amazing thing to do inside a stone circle. That's thousands and thousands of years old. It really is. But if you ain't got a stone circle, then you know, a clearing in a forest, or just an area. But of course, you can practice it in your house, you know, or wherever you are, wherever you've got a bit of space. The reason for the grove is mainly at level three. It's mainly just there so that we don't have to have a huge, long, straight line where we can do this, you know. Mm. We just go round and round. And this idea of Elt is called in Mongol. The circling idea is a big deal in...
Erelt.
Elt, it's called. Elt. Yeah, it's like the English word air, and then just put the letters LT. This isn't the official romanization. This is Damon's Mongolian romanization, you know. Erelt.
Just rewinding a sec, Tirolt is... Tirolt, when you're talking about that position, is the... Hands down by the side, facing outwards, palms. It's the image, the Woven Energy podcast image.
The famous Woven Energy podcast image. That is the Tyrol position. A little bit less widespread than that when you're starting off. Yeah, that kind of width of spread that's in that image is what comes out when you're really moving through your spirit dance. This just, you know, it's not like the Sound of Music. Yeah, if I'm doing this slowly, my hands, my arms, probably make a 90 degree angle between them, only, not 180 degrees. Although you can, of course.
So there's something specific for you guys.
Yes. Yeah, and don't get a protractor.
90 degrees.
Somewhere between, let's get this right, somewhere between 70 degrees and 160 degrees. There you go. rather than, let's say, 90, yeah? And it's the position that we used when we talked about a tilling exercise ages ago. It's the same position. And that embrace position is, you know, you're in the feeling in that is embracing nature. It's welcoming the outside world into you. This is possibly getting into level four. It's a tea bag in the ocean stuff. But again, don't imagine it. But you shouldn't feel when you're doing these type of techniques. Now, I'm going to hit you with a lot of Mongol today. I'm very sorry. But this sort of basic spirit dance, Huch Arug, that's a word I used to describe a collection of bass spirit dance techniques. So as we said, you know, spirit dance is level three, but it's not one technique, it's a whole bunch of them. If you think of foundational techniques, one term that can be used to describe a relatively, because, you know, there's thousands of techniques in spirit dance, there's thousands, tens of thousands maybe, but there's sort of some foundational stuff, and it's not like a syllabus or anything, but stuff that tends to be fundamental, basic in the spirit dance space. Huch Arug, there's a...
So that's just a general term for entry-level...
The collection of stuff. So you could say that Tirolt's part of Huch Arug, Havtas is part of Huch Arug, Ashqui, the heaviness thing, that's part of Huch Arug, Alchich, the walking, Bagtamstes, you know, is part of Huch Arug. These sort of foundational things. So it's just a general term that can be used. It's a term that I like to use, that can be used for like a bag of foundational spirit dance technique. Think of it like it's a toolbox, but it's not a huge toolbox with every last tool known to man. It's just like a bag with a hammer and a saw and, you know, maybe a screwdriver and, you know, basic stuff in there.
The basic stuff,
And... So what I'm recommending is you just form the tail position as you're moving around. Yeah. And I think we talked about sucking the foot back when we want to turn and go the other way. Mm. What you find is The whole thing is about ELT, really. It's all about circling. You're circling around the outside of the groove. When you suck the foot back, your body makes a circle. Your momentum makes a circle. And so what you find is the whole law of spirit dance is very much about circles. And what I'd like to talk about is this idea of turning. When you start to learn this kind of thing, it appears to be turning around and going the other way to you. As you're, you know, like a beginner's attitude towards spirit dance is, okay, now I've gone this way, I've walked around the groove this way, and now I need to turn around and go the other way. Mm. And so this, you get this concept of egach. There's another one. Another problem with hoch arag is, just like the word arag, a lot of the foundational stuff, unfortunately, in Mongol starts with the word A. So you got Elt, Ashgri, Alchach, Ergach, Arag. I apologize about that. There's nothing I can do about it. But there are a few others, you know, like Havtas. It starts with an H, yeah. So
we should also point out that the reason why you're using all these terms is because English doesn't afford you the richness
exactly.
in order to, exactly. to convey what these actually mean on
yeah,
a deep level.
Yeah, we'd probably call them all the same word in English, the whole lot of them, you know.
Yeah.
We could actually legitimately call each and every one of those things spirit if we wanted to, in terms of what their actual original Mongol meaning is. So, yeah. I'm just thinking we could have a Mongol to English dictionary where we have, you know, hundreds of Mongol words that all translate as
just spirit.
So this idea of ergach is quite important in spirit dance. It's not an idea really. It's a foundational pattern. It's like a change, right? So although we can, on a mundane level, we can call ergach a change, a turnaround or a change. But actually, it's more like an energy change. Although literally, you know, in English, if I was to translate ergach into English, I'd probably say turn around or turn. Mm. But actually, it's like an energy change. So what you're doing when you learn it in the basics is you just turn around. But this concept or this flavor of ergach is a constant thing once you get into spirit dance. You're forever turning. But that doesn't mean you're turning around. It just means the energy is constantly changing. It's rolling over on itself. It's cycling around. It's twisting. It's moving up. It's moving down. It's forever turning in that sense. In terms of it's forever changing. And so this idea of ergach is one I wanted to talk about. But how do we get there? How do we start to get that sense? Well, we need to start to practice getting a turn, getting this concept of ergach, this concept's a really bad word. I don't know what to really call it. Technique, this technique of ergach, flowing. And how do we do that? Well, if we just do the same turn every time, like we talked about in the last one, that's never going to happen because then we're just following set patterns, right? What we need to do is to start to introduce variety into the way that we are changing. Obviously, we always have to come back to chelicity. So if we start chucking tons and tons of stuff in, that's just going to knacker the chelicity. It's not very good. So what we want to do is put variations of change into it that are very, very similar to each other, but they introduce sufficient... They're similar to each other. That's important in order to keep the bagtamstis up on.
Keep the chelicity on. Purely because you don't want to be thinking about what you're doing.
But they're different enough for each other that we can start to get a flavor of ergach. Yeah, so this is what we try to do. And so I guess one way you could do ergach is simply as you're walking, you know, let's just call alchach. Rather than me saying chelicity-based walking, let's just take the word alchach to mean chelicity-based walking. It doesn't exactly, but let's just take that. So we've got alchach. We're moving around the groove. We can start to initiate ergach by, for instance, using the inside foot. The inside foot being the one that's towards the center of your groove. And when we use the inside foot, we, as we're stepping it forwards, we can just start to turn. So say I'm circling, my left foot is my inside foot. As I'm stepping my left foot forwards, and say the center of the groove is on my left, then I start to turn the step. My left foot turns towards my right. So the left foot is turning away from the center of the groove. The very next step is with the right foot. And that next step is the same next step I was going to make if I was continued walking in a straight line. Except that what it does is it moves forwards and then out to the right. This is my right foot now. The one that's the outside foot is moving forwards and out to the right. And it makes a completely natural step around the other way. Remember, I've still got the tailbone position on. And then I just keep walking. So it's as if these two steps, the inside foot, which I'm imagining is my left foot, is stepping and turning towards my right. The left foot walks away from the center of the groove. And then the right foot in the very next step moves over to the right more. And then I'm walking in the other direction. But the key point is the two steps are no different from the steps I was using when I was moving forwards, from the alchach I was using when I was moving forwards. Does that make some kind of sense?
Yes, so, I'm just trying to imagine it.
Yeah, well, this is the reason for we need the groove, isn't it, mate? You know. Actually, interestingly, I've been in that line. I've been putting together a kind of workshop, a kind of seminar, which I think I'm going to run somewhere, which is like an introduction to spirit dance. And it's a bag. It's this hook arag. I'm probably not going to call it that, or nobody will come. But basically, it's a seminar on hook arag. And all I'm going to do is show this kind of stuff in that seminar. It's very, very basic stuff. And obviously, a lot of the people who end up coming to it, I'm just going to advertise it on Eventbrite or something. I don't know where I'll run it. I'll probably run it. And it's only been like 3 hours long or something like that. I might run it in Cambridge or somewhere like that. I'm going to show this stuff. I'll probably video it and then I'll stick it in the groove. That's my idea.
That's the plan.
So basically what I'm saying is you're alchaching. That's my word for chelicity walking. You're alchaching around the perimeter of your groove. I just made that word up. It's not Mongo. And you're in the pterodactyl position. You've bagged Hamstays abs on. Say you're circling. So what we would say is you're circling here anti-clockwise. Yeah. Your left foot is towards the center of the groove. Your left foot steps, instead of along the perimeter of the groove, it steps towards the outside of the groove. Your right foot, completely naturally, it's the step your right foot was going to make anyway, just keeps walking and it steps away and further around to the right, and then you just walk off the other way. Now I'm walking around the groove.
Let me describe this back to you. I'm walking around the groove. I'm going right foot, left foot. Right foot, now I want to do this turn. So my left foot, the center of the groove is on my left as I'm walking around the outside of the groove. My left foot turns to the right.
No, it just steps to the right. It doesn't turn, it just steps to the right.
Okay, yeah. So I don't turn my toes back or anything. I just step and cross over my right.
You turn your toes only in the same way you would if you were walking over to your right. This is all natural, right? This is all natural walking. Yeah.
Yep. So this shouldn't be a problem for people. I just want to make this really clear. So
won't be a problem, because take as many steps as you need to turn around. So it won't be a problem. This is just how you initiate. How many steps you need to go all the way around? You can take 10 if you want, you know.
So again, right, left, right. And then my left crosses over the right, just naturally. Toes might turn a little bit. And then my right foot just moves.
Just keeps
however
walking.
However it would be alchaching. Normally. Just alchaching.
Off to your right. As if you're just the key point, the most important
thing. Away from
the
center of the circle. And then I just keep doing that until I've done a full circle.
Yeah,
not a full circle, sorry, a half circle. So I'm walking back the other way.
You've turned around, you're going the other way. It doesn't have to be exactly 180 degrees. In fact, if you're doing exactly clinical turn every time, you will never get the idea of spin it dance, because that's absolutely the opposite of what it's about. Yeah. It's just the key point with these steps is they're supernatural. I don't mean supernatural as in, you know, like unicorns. I mean, they're super pause natural.
Got you.
And okay. And then you just keep going. You just keep going. Yeah. So that would be an egg. So would the sucking the foot back one. That would be an egg. But that's more of a technique to teach you something. You remember we said, you know, the really interesting thing with that type of egg is it's your weight's about to go on that foot and then suddenly it's sucked away. That's more like, that's a little bit AMSCA, that technique. It's a little bit teaching you about changes that are going on inside your body, teaching you about balance, about energy changes in it. You know, I don't mean teaching on the baseline, you know what I mean? Midline and top line mostly. So that's more of a technique, but this is just like natural. It's just like natural, supernatural, super pros natural. Alchach, all the way. So the Alchach, telicity walking happens throughout this, yeah? And when you get used to it and you get a bit faster, you can turn tighter, but that's no difference than if you're in the street. So what I want you to imagine when you're doing this turn is that you see an interesting, you're out in the street shopping and you see an interesting shop over straight ahead of you. And you, as you're walking towards it, you suddenly see an even more interesting shop off to your right. And it just so happens that your left foot is currently stepping forwards. Yeah. That's it.
You're just instinctively guided by the second shop.
Exactly. And you don't want anything awkward. You don't want to do anything awkward with this stuff. Yeah. So practice that kind of, and so you go on the other way and then you can do exactly the same thing coming back. What I would say is that you are always, you're always turning away from the center of the circle. Yeah, that's the point. It's not necessarily a circle. The groove can be peanut-shaped, almond-shaped, triangular. You're turning away from the center of the groove, basically.
Before you move on to something else, this might be going off on a tangent, I'm not sure, but a thought has popped into my head. And I'm wondering whether it relates to this state that you're trying to convey to people. So when you're learning a skill, you start out having to very much be in a thinking state about that skill, you know, and it's very much a technique based. Learn this technique, learn that technique, and then over time it all fits together. Right.
Over the years, I've come to sort of a point where, on a very technical level, I started to dispute that to myself. I had that idea myself for years, and I've started to think, at long last, it's perhaps not as true as it appears to be to everybody. But anyway, that's another podcast.
Yeah, well, that'd be interesting to get your take on that. But my point was, like, when you get to a certain stage with a skill, so, for instance, I've experienced it with piano, I've experienced it in certain sports I used to play as a kid as well, but you have these moments. So, for instance, I might be playing the piano and I might be completely in the zone with it. So I'm not even thinking about anything. I'm just playing. Right. And this magical moment happens where you create something and you go, and then you snap out and you go, oh, shit, that was good. Well, but it's gone. It's almost like a dream that's gone. But it's this sort of like...
It's guchach. Yeah.
You always said
bat toshaltine and guchach. Yeah, this is what we're after, mate. It's guchach that we want here. Yeah.
It's that completely lack of thought. You let the skill set that you've developed take over.
Exactly.
And it almost just forms a life of its own.
Yeah, that's true. And if you're learning the piano or something, that's true. But just how long have you been walking, Joe?
Yeah, that's my point. Like this kind of, but equating the same thing. So because I would imagine with certain quote-unquote hobbies that people have, if they've got to a certain stage with that hobby, they might have experienced something similar to that. So it'd be like...
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
This hobby or certain things take on a life of its own. But it's that feeling that you want in this. Am I anywhere close to describing...
Yes, you are. Yes, but my point is, we're walking here, right?
Yeah.
So you've been walking since what, the age of what? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How much walking you've done in your life, Joe? You've got a fair old amount of guchuch with your walking, I would imagine, by this point in your life, yeah? So what you want to do, this is why I was talking about the naturalness of it. If you take advantage of that, if you take advantage of the fact that we have a lot of this stuff in us already, then sure, you'll drift, as you're picking up the technique, you'll drift away from chelicity a bit. You'll be dragged down to the baseline just through the natural process of learning something what you think is new. My point is if you take advantage of what you have learned already, your existing guchuch, in your alchuch, then you can get back to chelicity quite quickly. That's my point. Without too much practice. Yeah?
Yeah.
And these and techniques are good advantage, for that. That's the advantage of turning in a very natural way rather than turning in a sort of forced kind of way. In a stylized way. So, for instance, the way you would get in the famous martial art of Bagua Jang, yeah, those sort of stylized turns.
Yeah.
To become natural, those things have to be practiced an awful lot, right? But we're not talking about that here. We're just talking about turn around, right? You know, different ways to turn around in a natural kind of way. Much more like the kind of exploratory work that goes on, for instance, in the Feldenkrais method. Which is just exploratory work with natural human movement.
I like how we've spent 30 minutes just talking about how to turn around.
We ain't finished yet. I think that's what we're going to do in this whole episode, and maybe the next one as well. But it's not just how to turn around. That's the point. You think that to start off with. The point is when you try these quote-unquote different ways of turning around, and you start to absorb them all and you get more and more layers of this self-same thing, which might seem to be the boring old just naturally turning around, you will find that you don't see Egach as turning around anymore. You'll see it much less like turning around and more like change, energy change, and energy change in the weave. So the Guruch, yeah? So... But I'm just telling you what's going to come out of your practice, which probably isn't a good idea. I should let you practice, and then we'll talk about what's come out of your practice here. I don't mean you, Joe. I mean everybody listening. Yeah. So what's the next thing? Well, we build on what we know. Remember we said shamanism's like building layer on layer on a strong foundation, which is chelicity. Well, we know Teruel, but we also know Havtas, right? So as we initiate that, so once you practice that quite a lot, staying in the Teruel position, the next thing to do is as you step away from the center, you turn your back towards the center of the grove. And one of the things I like to think about in terms of this is a bonfire. This is wonderful stuff to do around a bonfire if you can organize it. You want to just imagine it's a very cold night and you want to warm your back. That's why you're turning your back towards the center of the grove, is to warm it up on the bonfire. And just as you do that turn, you can bring your hands into the folded wings position, into the Havtas. And just don't imagine this, but it's as if you just, as you're turning, you're striking the drum. Now, you remember this, yeah? Do you remember what we did in the Amskar techniques? When your breath changes, we strike the drum, or the drum is struck, yeah?
Yeah.
This is exactly the same thing coming through into level 3, yeah? It happens. As you turn, as your body naturally turns, the drum is struck. You don't strike it, the drum is struck. Except if you haven't got a drum on your arm, it's just you just go in a Havtas position, right? Havtas position is just the drum striking position, yeah? So, and then as you step out, so this is, as your left foot comes in, the drum is struck, you go into Havtas, and as you step out with your right foot, you separate back into Teruel again, and then you keep going. So you're just adding that little transition, that little change, where you're striking the drum, and do it with a drum. Put your Shams drum on your left arm and just do it if you want to do that. So if your Shams drum's on your left arm, when you're doing Teruel, the inside of the drum will be facing slightly upwards to the sky, embracing the sky, if you like. As you step inwards naturally with your left foot in Egach, a version of Egach, the drum is naturally struck, and it's the transition within the energy, the transition within your body, the transition within the situation that is striking the drum. You're not hitting it. And this is a really, really important point. And this point is true if even if you don't have the drum on your arm, you're not putting your arms into the half-task position. The situation is precipitating that. The situation of your amskar, the holistic amska within your system of your body, and the energy of the environment even, and the momentum of your body, and the change of the energy that's ongoing, the alchach that's ongoing, that causes the drum to be struck. You do not hit the drum. That's the point. Mm. Or it causes half-task position to be formed. You do not form it. Does that make some kind of sense, what I'm hinting at there?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It does.
And if you remember back to the exercise we're using when we change it, hit the drum is struck on the change of the breath in Amska. Do you remember that?
Yeah, now it's the change of energy.
Exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing, the same feeling, the same essence. Identical going into half-task. And whether you got the drum or not, it's the same thing. Yeah. And I hope everybody knows by now half-task position. If you don't know what half-task is, you're probably missing a few episodes. One of the things with the Woven Energy podcast, if you are a new listener, with our sister podcast, Heretics, you can jump in wherever you like. Unfortunately, with Woven Energy, that's not really very possible. So start from episode one. And so the half-task position is formed, and then you got this beautiful opening into a brace as you go around the other side of the groove. And you can also, sometimes it just feels nice, it feels right. You know, as I say, as the spirit takes you, don't decide these things. Mm. Sometimes you just open right around straight into the center of the groove and go straight through the center of the groove, or go close to the center of the groove, wherever you want to go. One of the other things not to fight, and this is another thing that's completely different from learning martial arts, just the exact polar opposite. When you learn a lot of traditional martial arts, you are fighting with your natural movements to put yourself into certain positions. In shamanism, we want the exact opposite of that. There's no rules. There's no right and wrong. These are just techniques. The way to think about them is they're frameworks. They're frameworks or platforms of variation. Mm. If you feel like turning right into the center or feel like going wherever, don't fight that feeling. That's great. That's the spirit trying to lead you. That's the spirit trying to teach you. Don't fight it, but also don't imagine it. Don't imagine that there's some little man behind your ear telling you to turn this way and that way. You know that's not right if you're doing that. Mm-hmm. If it's spontaneous, if there's no thought to it and it's a change that just comes out, you alchach wherever you please. Yeah, in this technique. Yeah, just alchach wherever you please.
Turning.
It's no, alchach is chalice-based walking. Yeah,
chalice-based walking. Alchach. Yeah, right. Yep.
And so, the turning, which I've said doesn't really mean turning in spirit dance, but it does to beginners, and it doesn't mean anything. It's got generally spirit dance beginners will view ergach. Not alchach, ergach, as turning, yeah? But once you get quite deeply steeped in spirit dance, that definition will make you cringe because it's about change, it's not about turning, yeah?
Yeah.
So what I'm saying there is you can go tirelt as you turn, as the spirit takes you. And there's another thing in terms of deciding when to turn. Well, obviously, when you start off and you're trying to learn this, you'll be deciding when to turn. But it's ideal if you don't decide when to turn. So please don't decide. You want to get to the place where you're not deciding. The situation is deciding. The context is deciding. The amskar, in the biggest sense, is deciding when you turn. You're not deciding. So I use this phrase, I use it again, as the spirit takes you, as the spirit takes you, that's when you turn.
Yeah, it's a good phrase, that.
Yeah. And eventually you'll find that the spirit takes you more and more often, and eventually you never stop ergaching. You may not turn all the time, but you never stop ergach. Once you get into spirit dance, everything is ergach. There's no stopping. So if you practice the Tilling exercise, incidentally, If you have done that, you can also do that. So you can add a little thing out of that. So this idea of elt, which is the circling, you know, like walking around the grove, alchicking around the grove. You, if you want to, as you turn that left foot in and you form the half-task position, you can, if you're completely familiar with it, so do not attempt this unless you've practiced tilling a hell of a lot. Otherwise, it will totally mess up your tillicity. So I'm only talking to those people listening who've practiced tilling a lot. Yeah. As you do that half-task, that little cycle, that little circle out of the middle of tilling, you might naturally feel that you start putting that in quite naturally because you're so familiar with the tilling technique. If that's happening, don't fight that. That's great. And so what you find is that circle quite naturally leads you out beautifully into tilt. So what I'm saying is half-task has a circle, comes to have a circle within a circle. I do not recommend practicing this in this alchic technique. I recommend practicing it in tilling to the point where you don't even have to think about that little cycle. And probably you'll find as you start egach and you're moving into half-task, you'll find that little circle, you know, the small circle within the big circle, you find that coming out anyway as you step out into tilt again. Yeah. That would be a beautiful progression in terms of where you are moving, where you're going. I mean, moving in terms of the weave, in terms of the guruch, that would be a beautiful progression. If it's coming out naturally, if it's coming out in a state of chalicity, for goodness sake, don't fight that. For those people who have practiced tilling a lot, if you haven't practiced tilling, it's perfectly okay to do this without doing that. In fact, if you haven't practiced tilling, it's probably very, very sensible to make sure that you don't do that. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, but that is a nice idea as a next stage. But of course, like everything, you have to go back a stage to practice tilling and then
bring it in. I would hope that there's a few people who have been practicing tilling.
Yeah.
We do have a lot of people listening to this podcast, so there's probably among them, there's a few people who have been, and they can probably try that immediately, you know.
Good.
It's not really trying it. I think it's more like they'll find that happening. They probably won't have to try too hard. That's my point. So my real point was, if you're used to tilling, you practice it quite a lot, and you find that happening, don't fight that. That's a good thing. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then the question is, so that's turning it away from the center of the circle. So now, what if we want to turn in?
Which was my next question.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So this is where we get a thing called nochro egach. And it's not exactly the same. We're moving around the circle. Let's say we're going anti-clockwise. So you could do the mirror image going clockwise or anti-clockwise, doesn't matter. But let's stick, because we've been describing going anti-clockwise, let's stick with that. So left foot's on the inside of the circle.
Yeah.
And so we're moving along in that way. As we move, we step forwards quite naturally. And because we're going around the circle, that foot is still going that way, right? It's still moving in that way, yeah?
Mm.
So as we're stepping, we just keep stepping in that way, and then it's as the left foot steps. As the left foot steps, the left foot turns out towards the center of the circle, yeah?
Yeah.
And here, whether or not... Here you do make half-task at this position, yeah? So going the other way, it's entirely optional, right?
Mm.
But this way, you definitely want to make half-task here. You come in, and so what I'm saying is you step just naturally with your right foot, and then as your left foot steps, you step around to your left with your left foot, and you make half-task. Don't just leave tear up there. You make half-task. And then you step out with your left foot as if nothing's happened. So basically what you want your left foot to feel as you're doing this movement, you want your left foot to feel completely weightless early in this movement. And so what I mean is, as you make that half toss, you've got your ashkwi on and all that heaviness is going down through the right foot and the left foot is free. A big mistake that people make in turning the other way is the left foot is caught up on the ground because they think, oh, now I'm turning. When they were doing alchic in a straight line, that left foot was free. But because they're thinking, oh, now I'm turning, the left foot's got to do something. It's got to turn into the center. For whatever reason, the left foot tends to get caught up. What I call it, the left foot gets tangled in the baseline. You don't want that. Don't let your left foot get tangled in the baseline. Your left foot wants to stay on the midline, wants to stay in that manifest realm. And so what I'm saying is your left foot just steps completely naturally. Now, this is a bit harder than turning the other way. People find it more difficult turning in than turning out. And you just want that to be a completely natural step. You definitely want to make half toss here. And then you step out into Tirukh again. And what you'll find again, if you practice Tilin, you'll find that little circle coming again. Just as I said before, it's really, really important. Let that little circle happen, the little Tilin circle, let it happen. Because that's a really beautiful addition, really useful addition to your radar.
It's another cycle.
Yeah. But what we're trying to do is make a quite complex weave through this stuff. So it's a radar for nature because the next few levels, we start interacting with that weave, with the weave of the environment. But just at this level, we're just adding movement. And so then we come out and we separate back into Tirukh. And then we're going the other way. It's just the same. So my point is the two turns are very similar. But what I find is for a lot of people trying to pick this up, not that a lot of people do try to pick this up, but what I mean by that is that it's a common mistake. When you're turning away from the center of the groove, the right foot tends, if you're going anti-clockwise, if you're going the other way, it's the other feet, yeah, but if you're going anti-clockwise, the right foot doesn't necessarily get caught up very much. But when you're going the same way, anti-clockwise, and you try the turn in, you'll find the left foot gets caught up, gets tangled, not just on the ground, but in the baseline of your mind. And this requires a lot of practice to get rid of that. And the way to get rid of it is to do half toss. Don't try to do that just holding Tirukh. It won't work very nicely, at least not to begin with. And you want your left foot to feel free as a bird. Yeah.
As soon as the right foot comes down with that heaviness, the left foot's turning.
Left foot's free, just like it was walking straight ahead, except it's not walking straight ahead, it's turning back the other way, yeah?
It's turning back the other way into the middle of the circle.
It could do, if you want to, but I mean back the other way from where you came from, you know? Like a 180-ish degree turn, yeah?
It's so we're not actually doing a turn like we were with the other one when we're turning... When we're turning to the right, we're actually doing a turn, quote unquote.
Turn in either case. We're doing an egg in both cases.
You know what I mean? Just bear with me, sure. Right? Try and get my head around this. So, we're egging to the right when we're going anti-clockwise around the circle. When we're doing our quote-unquote turn to the outside of the groove, we are actually turning around. The left foot almost crosses over the right, and then the right naturally keeps it going, and we turn around and we go the other way.
That's right, yeah.
With the left, if we're turning in, there isn't a turn. Yes. It's like it almost skips backwards. We're just doing a 180, and it turns back with the habtas.
180-ish. But if you want to, if the spread takes you and you want to go straight into the center of the groove, why not?
And of course we could do the same with the right foot instead of the left, right? And so if we're turning, so we could, like, instead of doing the quote-unquote turn on the outside, we could do the turn on the inside, but we just use the right foot instead of the left.
And then we do a...
Sure.
I've lost you. I've lost myself.
That's fine, mate.
We need the grove, mate. We need the grove.
We do indeed. So, like I say,
this is one of those episodes I think we're going to have to...
that I'm putting together will make everything quite clear quite quickly. Yeah. The Grove has actually come on quite a lot in terms of the technology behind it now. The platform is basically there. There's one of our founder patrons is in there at the moment. And I still need to get out, passwords for the patrons area out to other patrons. I'm doing that in order, basically. But basically, we want to do this stuff in as natural a way as possible. And I think that it really, you know, there's a strong desire to see a video of it. But in some ways, a video won't show you. In some ways it will. If you understand all of the stuff, if you've got your pagoda, if you've got your Chalice in place, you've got your Amskar in place, and you've got your Ashgui in place, which I have done a little video on, and that is already in the patrons area on the Grove. But I want to do a better video on that. I think it might be on Patreon as well, I'm not too sure. You've got your Alchach going. When you move into Egach going both ways, you keep that natural. My point is, if you just saw a video of somebody doing that who could do it in a shamanic way, it wouldn't teach you to do that because it's all visual stuff and all. You don't see all of that stuff that's behind it. You don't see the heart of the technique. Yeah. It's still a technique. It's still an Amskar technique that you're doing here. And it's more about the change of the energy and the physical movements. If you concentrate them on those too strongly, you end up doing ordinary dancing, not a spirit dance. And this is really, really important to get, not just for these ones we're talking about now, but across the board. If you start thinking about these things as set patterns of movement, set moves, you will move further away from spirit dance, not closer to it. Yeah. So what I'm saying is have the attitude that if it's not exactly right, it doesn't matter as long as it's coming out of a strong foundation of chelicity, of a really, really good grasp of Amskar. With the Ashgui in place and the Alchach is true chelicity-based Alchach, it's not just ordinary walking, then the Egach coming out of that will be correct, even if you don't, quote-unquote, make the dance step in the way that Uncle Damon says you should. Do you follow what I mean? This is about self-learning.
It's what feels natural to you.
No, that's a bad one. Don't say that. Don't say that. Because what can feel natural to you can also... You remember we talked about the two different parts of intuition, yeah? And so that's my worry about that phrase. You're sort of right, but there's always two parts of what feels natural to you. There's what feels natural to you that is actually natural, i.e. there's what feels natural that is the real part of you. And then there's what feels natural to you because of the miasma, yeah? Because
so it's
you
where
think
the
it
spirit
feels
takes
natural.
You.
Where the spirit takes you, absolutely, is the best way. And if you're not deciding, that's the best place to be in. These things happen, you don't make them happen. If it doesn't happen and you're just practicing your Alchach and Egach doesn't happen very often, then don't do it. There's nothing wrong with practicing Chalicity with Alchach. In a beautiful grove out in the countryside, I'd just keep doing Alchach all day long, round and round the grove. I have a wonderful, wonderful time. And there might not be a single 180-degree turn anywhere in evidence. So we're just talking about how do we make our radar rich here. But it always has to be spontaneous. If there's nothing driving it, if there's nothing behind it, then don't do it. Yeah, that's how spirit dance works.
Yeah,
and remember,
yeah.
There's no,
I haven't turned for a while. I better turn.
Exactly,
now.
That's like the worst thing you could possibly think. You know, I haven't turned for a while. Oh dear, you know, that's miasma central. Yeah, or you feel like you ought to be turning or something. No, you don't feel like turning, don't turn. So that's basically how to do Ergach away from the center of the grove and towards the center of the grove, turning the two ways out of Alchach, chelicity-based walking. But it's the distinction, just to be clear, it's the distinction between ordinary dance and spirit dance is not where your feet are stepping. It's not where your movements are going. It's not whether you're in the perfectly beautiful tarot position. There's not a panel of judges judging whether your fingers are at the correct height in relation to your ears, you know, or even that your head's up straight and your back straight and stuff like that. There is no panel of judges. Yeah, this is spirit dance. This is not ballroom dancing. Yeah, remember one of the things I said, if you want to see the exact polar opposite of spirit dance, ballroom dancing is what you should have a look at. Have a look at a real high-level ballroom dancing competition, especially the silly smile that's plastered on their faces. That smile is the 180-degree opposite of spirit dance, yeah? So, I mean, I want to get into more Ergach, so I think that's a good for this one.
Yep.
That's definitely 55 minutes. So we've done normal Ergach. Next time we're going to do Nochro Ergach, Bach Gai Ergach, Haratze Ergach. Yeah, we're going to do all kind of Ergach next time. But just to get a general introduction to Ergach, you could say that's what we've introduced in this particular episode.
Oh, yeah. Guys, I really hope that this is making sense to you. I really do. There's a lot of Mongolian there, isn't there?
We can always go back over it.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know why, just on that point, you know why I'm using Mongol words, don't you?
It's necessary.
If I use English words, honestly, it will take you three times as long to learn this, if I use English words, because you'll think you know what I'm saying, and you'll be wrong.
Yeah. You want to use the term, and people understand what that means on a deeper level, rather than having to explain
I'd rather use a term that they don't bother about trying to understand what it means. Because if that understanding is on the baseline, if they want to understand it on a deeper level on the midline where it's correct to understand spirit dance then and in the top line, then that's fine. Because remember, this is all about the top line, this stuff. The top line, the midline. The baseline, who cares? Yeah, I really don't care. And that's my worry. If I start using English words, that these English words are not direct translations of the Mongol words, but B, Mongol's a much better language for talking about shamanism than English is. Just far better language.
And also, hopefully people will have listened, hopefully you guys will have listened to this episode anyway, because remember, this podcast is, you got to listen to it in order. But I think it was episode 6. It was either 5 or 6 where we talked about the word spirit, and on the subject of using Mongol, that is... That was a really good episode. I thoroughly enjoyed that episode. It was all about
That's probably a good one to go back and listen to.
Even if you have listened to it, go back and listen to it again.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites as well. It gives you it really explains quite well the problem with English.
Yeah. All right, cracking. So next episode we will be continuing from this one. We'll do another episode on the Ashkenazi. Ergach.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to do a few episodes, I think, on the Hucharig.
We're getting deep into stage 3 now, so that's good.
I wouldn't say we're getting deep into it, but
we're getting started. We're scratching the surface.
Past the paddling pool.
Speaking of English, it's like every time I say something, it's like, but Joseph.
Yeah, exactly.
It's difficult, mate. It's
not you, mate. It is super difficult, and that's why I give up. You know, there are other languages I could have used. The Siberian languages are also good for talking about this stuff. But I studied Mongol, and that's the one I've polarized towards. Japanese equivalents for all of these things. Pretty much all of them.
It's just the case. The point is not a shamanic language. It didn't do.
But my point there is that Japanese is like a halfway house. It's better than English, but it's still nowhere near as good as Mongol. So, you know, I find Mongol's really, really good in that it has a shamanic flavor that permeates the language. And it's not surprising. Yeah. There were shamans. They're shamans to this day, those people. Even when they were communists, they were just shamans pretending to be communists, you know. So it's like, it's in their nature. It's in their bones. They don't go around thinking they're shamans. They just are. Or they're just, animists. They just are. And that's reflected in their language, and it is a really great language for talking about that stuff. If you have to put it into words, but remember all these words are all off the baseline, even in Mongol. Yeah, and what I'd really like you to understand is start to understand this stuff through your practice, and not on the baseline, not analyzing your practice. Through your practice, it goes into your midline, into your top line. It goes into your ideally, it goes direct into your gukuk. Bypasses your cerebral cortex entirely, goes straight into your limbic system. Yeah.
Well, on that note, I think we're done. Another awesome, good episode, mate. And we'll continue this in the next episode. Guys, if you, few things, if you go to wovenenergy.com/start-here, you can grab your Get Started episode where I prod Damon a bit and try and get some interesting nuggets out of him. You can also head to Patreon, support us on Patreon. Damon, what's the address for that? Patreon.com/wovenenergy. Just Woven Energy.
Yeah, all one word. All one word. Woven Energy, yeah.
Yep. So you can donate a variety of there's a bunch of options on there, isn't there? And various perks. So if you want to help us out, you can go and support us over on Patreon. You can also give our podcast a nice review on iTunes. We like 5-star reviews over here, but of course, it's entirely up to you. It always helps us rank and, you know, gets us in front of more people. So that would really help us out. Thanks a lot, guys.
Wait a minute, Joe. You've just reminded me of something.
Yep.
I think we've had some new patrons.
Oh, right.
So we should probably thank them. And I think that would be good. Now what I'm worried about is that we're actually going to miss somebody out here. So because it's such a long time since we've... I'm going to check this afterwards.
Why don't we introduce our next episode? We'll do that on the next episode.
So guys that have become patrons recently, thanks ever so much. We traditionally do this at the start of the episode. The next one will come out soon. It'll be a continuation of this one. We will thank you wonderful people very, very shortly. You know who you are, and I cannot tell you how much that is appreciated. To be honest, we would have stopped. To be honest, if it wasn't for our patrons, we certainly would have stopped these podcasts. That would have happened in very recent times. So it's you that's kept us going. And it's you that's making all this happen. So thanks ever so much.
Cracking. Thanks, guys. And we'll see you next episode.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.